This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the migrant crisis in Europe, its origins and implications. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Europe is grappling with the biggest wave of migration since World War II. According to the Wall Street Journal, as many as 800,000 people seeking asylum are expected to arrive in Germany this year. The International Organization for Migration said that nearly 250,000 migrants had crossed the Mediterranean to Europe already this year, singling out the strain on debt-strapped Greece. The United Nations has called for urgent action to address the crisis in Europe. For many of the refugees, Greece is seen as a stepping stone to Western Europe. Although Turkey is hosting nearly 2 million Syrian refugees, more than any other country, many Syrians say they do not see a future there. To get to Europe, they depend on a vast, illegal, and treacherous smuggling operation that has grown as the Syrian war grinds on. The numbers are likely to add fuel to a divisive debate in the European Union over burden sharing and migration policy, with Germany and other countries hit hard by the crisis, trying to convince the rest of the EU to share the costs more evenly. Well, with us to discuss the politics of the migrant crisis in Europe are two distinguished analysts. Ambassador François Rivasseau is deputy head of the EU delegation to the United States. Prior to joining the delegation, he served from 2007 until 2011 as the deputy head of diplomatic mission at the French embassy here in Washington. And Constanze Stelzenmüller. She's a senior fellow with the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution, and that's a think tank based here in Washington. She was previously a senior transatlantic fellow at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, directing GMF's Transatlantic Trends Survey Program. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, I'd like to begin with you. Some analysts are saying that the asylum issue, this migration crisis in Europe, is currently Europe's biggest challenge, greater even than divisions over the Greek debt crisis. How would you characterize the problem?
Yes, indeed. This is the worst crisis of refugees and migrations that Europe faces since the Second World War. It's unprecedented, it's huge, and it seems to continue growing. We have not the capability alone to stop it because it is fueled by the instability, the wars, and the poverty also in all the regions near from Europe of Eurasia, ranging from Afghanistan to Nigeria, from Asia to Africa. And particularly a number of conflicts, obviously, fuels these moves, conflict in Syria, conflict in Libya, instability in Sahel, conflict in Yemen, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, poverty in Eritrea, to name the most important of them. And we see every day more refugees coming. Some months ago, they were arriving mostly through the central Mediterranean to Italy and Malta. There is also pressure at the western side of the Mediterranean, in Ceuta and Melilla from Morocco. And today the most urgent and terrible crisis is on the east, where you have continental pressure through Bulgaria and Greece. But particularly today, the most dramatic situation is around the Greek islands, Kos and Lesbos, where you have till 2,000 refugees arriving by day on islands where the population is not so much superior to this figure. So we have to take a lot of emergency measures based on the principle of solidarity. We have to work on solidarity. And, you know, the European Union has been built through crisis. This is a terrible crisis. But we have begun to build systems of solidarity since the month of May. And this is something new because till some months ago, the EU was doing not much in terms of solidarity. But solidarity is one aspect of the problem. We have also to show responsibility vis-à-vis those who arrive. We have to ensure that they arrive safely, that they are not drowning at sea, that they are not victims of smugglers and traffickers. But we have also to show responsibility vis-à-vis ourselves and our population. We cannot accept economic migrants if this doesn't fill our need, because then it would ruin the economy of Europe, and that's not, by the way, what migrants are seeking.
Let me turn now to Constanze Stelzenmüller to weigh in on the magnitude of the problem, Constanze, and also to distinguish between these migrants who are fleeing political strife and war and economic migrants.
Before I joined the German Marshall Fund, I was a reporter at Die Zeit, a weekly paper based in Hamburg, and I was in fact their humanitarian crisis reporter and went to a lot of the zones that François Rivasseau has just mentioned. I've been to Eritrea, I've been to the Middle East, been to other parts of Africa, and I've seen what mass migration can do. By the way, this is all very serious, and as the ambassador says, it is the worst crisis in Europe since the end of the war. But I was in Rwanda, Tanzania, on the border of Rwanda, just after 250,000 people crossed over from Rwanda during the genocide within 24 hours. So while it's okay for us to focus on what's happening in Europe, let's not forget that similar things happen in other countries. It's certainly true that this is a huge burden for us. The point of reference for me, really, is the years that I started out as a journalist were the early 90s. And in the breakup of Yugoslavia, I think Germany, my own country alone, became a temporary home to, I think, between 300,000 and 400,000 refugees. That was the biggest Germany had seen since 1945. And what we are now expecting for this year in Germany alone is 800,000, more than double that. That said, per capita, Sweden is taking in even more than that.
All right. Back to you, Mr. Ambassador, to talk about the status of the flow and terms. We talk about migrants, refugees, asylum seekers. Break things down for us. You talked about migrants seeking political asylum, those fleeing Syria, for example, or Libya or some conflicts, but also there are others fleeing economic instability. How do things break down?
It is very difficult to have a precise answer to that. In 2014, it was a year where most of the migrants were coming from areas of directly affected by conflicts and wars. This year, we tend to see an increase of economic migrants proportionally to people coming from affected regions of conflicts. And that's why in Europe, one of the ideas we have is set up harmonized European list of safe countries of origin to fast-track asylum procedures for those who come with unfounded claims and ensure that they can return safely to their place of origin.
Let me turn to Constanze Stelzenmüller. Constanze, what is your sense of how the migrants break down into economic migrants versus those fleeing, let's say, Syria or Libya, particularly Syria, though?
Carol, the ambassador is entirely right. It's one of the hardest things in this whole situation is getting precise data. This is something that the United Nations Commission for Refugees, UNHCR, has been tracking for decades, but I went to their website and they, at this point, only have 2014 numbers. It's safe to say from Syria right now, there are 4 million refugees, Syrians outside of Syria. And while the largest number there for the past couple of years has been received by neighboring countries, above all Turkey, but also Jordan and Lebanon and others, they're increasingly now moving into Europe. And these people are fleeing a horrific civil war under our tremendous duress, have seen the most terrible things, depredations by the government armed forces and police, bombing, shelling, and human rights crimes, really. I think it's safe to say that none of those are coming for economic reasons. Eritrea, similarly, I've been to Eritrea a number of times. Eritrea has become, unfortunately, something like a police state. While they certainly have a great deal of economic hardship because they, after independence a couple decades ago, never really got their economy up and running. What people who are fleeing Eritrea now is a combination of political persecution and economic hardship.
Well, I wanted to bring up the division in so far as those that are fleeing conflict. We need to address in the second half of the program what is being done to address the roots of the problem. That is, how can we stop the civil war in Syria and staunch the flow of those refugees, which would certainly ease the burden on Europe. Back to you, Ambassador Rivasseau, to talk about specifically what the EU is doing. What measures are you taking? What are the challenges you're facing in order to accommodate this inordinate flow of migrants? And what are some of the divisions among the member states?
Well, since the month of May, we have defined an agenda for facing this migration problem, and we have enriched it as fast as we could. We have, for example, first decided structural actions to allow settlement and welcoming the migrants, and for a 5-year period from 2015 till 2020, We have 7 billion, which is significant. Then we have obviously also humanitarian aid and emergency aid for a number of millions. We are trying to prevent migrants being drowned at sea. You know that there's more than 2,000 people who died at sea trying to arrive in Europe. So we have two naval operations which are funded by a number of member states. In central Mediterranean, we call it Triton, and in eastern Mediterranean, we call it Poseidon. And this is made by ships which try to gather intelligence to A, protect the migrants, but B, also disrupt the smugglers and traffickers' networks and to avoid then the repetition of such dramas at sea. Then we have also tried to increase and implement the reception of migrants and the point of arrival. We call that the hotspots. We have one in Sicily, Catania. We are beginning to put some of them in Greece with more success in some places than others because, for example, on the island, of course, you know, we had nothing and began to arrive very quickly. So now we are trying to establish it, but there's always some time which passes. And we have internally in Europe, we are trying to get more solidarity. We have defined the idea of a permanent relocation scheme to relocate people in need of international protections from member states facing emergency situations or high fluxes of migrants as a given moment of time, so that it's not always the same. Italy, Greece, Malta at the beginning, Germany at the end, who supports the bigger burden sharing. And so now this has been, in principle, quite successful. Everybody has accepted the principle. There are still some struggling about the figures, but
Of
burden sharing, this is always the case, but it's something new, the acceptation of this principle. And we are trying to find out measures to speed up the return of migrants that are not entitled to international protection because we cannot have them. And we try also to better control illegal immigration and to stop it. At the same time, we know that legal immigration, when it is controlled in some sectors, is in the interest of a number of countries in Europe. So we try also to encourage legal and to channel legal immigration better. Plus, obviously, a huge effort of solidarity in many towns in Europe for migrants, and sometimes it's not enough.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Ambassador François Rivasseau, his deputy head of the EU delegation to the United States, and Constanze Stelzenmüller, senior fellow with the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution. We're talking about the politics of the migrant crisis in Europe. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or keep up with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Carol Castiel VOA. And here's a shout out to a loyal listener from Istanbul, Turkey, Feriha Toraman. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, back to you, Constanze Stelzenmüller from the Brookings Institution, for a response, for your reaction to how the EU is dealing with this horrific crisis. It would be challenging in any country or continent. What about the burden-sharing measures, the fact that Germany and Sweden are taking the lion's share? How do you think that's going to play out?
It seems to me that Germany and Sweden are well positioned to take in the numbers that they're taking in. Yeah? I mean, you will have heard of and seen pictures on social media and elsewhere of the protests against refugees in my own country of Germany, of right-wing populist movements protesting against this. And I'm not going to deny that those exist, but I'm also relieved to say that on my own social media feeds, Twitter and Facebook, I see people I know, friends of mine, you know, starting volunteer movements, calling people to donate, to come and organize, to come and help. And there is an outpouring of sympathy and also an outpouring of support for politicians and media figures who have expressed criticism of the right-wing protesters. So I think that on the whole, Germany, I think, is doing its job in terms of its own intake. And the government, I think, has so far been entirely supportive of this. Let me move to two larger picture points here. As the ambassador was saying, there is a solidarity problem here in Europe. Some of the smaller and newer EU member states have point blank refused to take in more refugees, arguing that they have economic issues, social issues, that this would exacerbate problems that they already have with migrants. That is, I think, legitimate, but it does also create a problem. And then there is, of course, you know, the larger issue of the fact that if you look at Europe's demographics, yeah, we all have declining birth rates, certainly my country absolutely not excluded. And I think a big strategic motive for saying we should welcome migrants and we should integrate them, particularly given that a lot of the people who are making their way to our shores after very arduous journeys and many, many hardships are people who are, you know, real copers and survivalists and often very educated. And the fact of the matter is that our workforce in 10, 20, 30 years isn't going to come from inside Europe. Given our demographics, they'll come from outside of Europe. So we need to make an effort to integrate these people better. That said, we also need to look at the root causes, the wars in the Middle East and in the disintegration of states in Northern Africa, and try and contain that.
And let's move on to that very topic. So back to you, Ambassador François Rivas. So to talk about what is being done at the political level to resolve the conflicts that are pushing people out. How much emphasis is the EU placing on pushing for resolution of the conflicts in Syria and Iraq, particularly in Syria?
Syria, you know, there's a number of years that the international community tries to help improving the situation. Very recently, we have seen in the United Nations the adoption of a concept last week, which maybe could pave the way to some further discussions, but it will take time. The reality is that these are wars now which are extremely deeply entrenched, and there's not a single simple solution. The only thing we can do is try to progressively inject some stability in this region where and when it is feasible. I fear that this will not be immediately the case in the Syrian crisis.
Mr. Ambassador, your native France was very outspoken back in the day, a couple of years ago, with respect to attacking the military targets of Bashar al-Assad when it was proven that he perpetrated chemical attacks on his own people. He is fueling the rise of ISIL, which is, of course, also equally brutal. Is France doing something behind the scenes to address that?
Diplomacy is always extremely active, and the French authorities are given, as I said, constant and extremely high attention on that. That said, the problem cannot be solved by one country alone. It has to be a common effort, and we have to build up more consensus, first in the region, between the various allies of the various factions fighting in Syria. But you have to understand that for France, today, Assad is not the most immediate problem. The most immediate problem is ISIS.
But what about the argument that Assad fuels the rise of ISIS?
Yes, absolutely. No, both problems are linked. But we tend to start analyzing the problem in the public opinion in France looks first at the question of foreign fighters, and then you have to explain them all the reasons for the crisis, the responsibilities of Assad in it, and that we need a global solution. So the pressure on us today is to try to stop ISIS, and this means, obviously, solving the question of a regime.
Not only that, but Constanze Stelzenmüller, we have Iraq as well. Again, there are two sides of the same coin. You have marginalized communities, both actually in Syria of the Sunni community, even though they're the majority vis-a-vis the Alawites, which is the same ethnic group as Bashar al-Assad. And you have the Sunnis, who are a minority in Iraq, in a Shia-led government. What are your observations with respect to diplomatic efforts to really get to the root of the problem that is causing this outflow of refugees, both from Syria and Iraq? Do you think effective measures are in the works?
No, but I don't think anybody's to be blamed for that. I think what we're seeing here is bigger than even a superpower, together with the EU, can contain or turn into a peaceable and stable situation at this point. We're seeing the breakup of the post-war Middle Eastern and North African order, an order that was in some cases imposed between the two world wars or even earlier, and very often based on colonial, you know, map drawing that had no relation to the actual power structures on the ground. And it's also, I think we all know that the West has, in many cases, happily tolerated some authoritarian rulers or even dictators who treated their civil societies and their people extremely badly for the sake of stability. And you can even make a realist argument to say that that was necessary for a time, but I think it's now coming and hitting us in the teeth. The reality is that I think all of us, America and Europeans, for different reasons and rooted in different behaviors at different times, have limited credibility and legitimacy as actors in the Middle East. And while I think we've all, as societies, worked through our previous behavior, and I think that there is a fair amount of good faith involved on all sides at this point, the situation has become so complex that I think it's nearly out of control. We have spent, all of us, and Europe certainly, billions in development aid, have expended a great deal in very muscular diplomacy, and some countries, not mine, but certainly the Americans and the UK, I'm not sure about the French, are conducting airstrikes against the forces of ISIS. And of course, the question is, you know, do you thereby empower Bashar al-Assad's forces? I don't think there's any easy answer to that. But conversely, to contradict something that you were suggesting, Carol, if we got a grip on Bashar al-Assad, that wouldn't make ISIS go away, because that is rooted in injustices, imbalances, power problems that are much older than we can get a grip on. So I think at this point, what we are looking at is decades of containment and management, attempting perhaps to rebuild state structures where we can. Let's take a case in point, Tunisia. Probably the only country of the so-called Arab Spring of 2011 left standing that still has something that we would recognize as a pluralist system and democracy, and with an attempt at protecting civil society. But Europe is finding it incredibly difficult to support that kind of country with, say, trade preferential treatment. Yeah. Because that would mean letting in Tunisian citrus fruits and tomatoes and disadvantaging southern European citrus and tomato growers. This is the kind of thing that we're dealing with. It is incredibly difficult to do in practice.
Very, very difficult. And so many, it requires a multi-pronged approach, and it's not easy. But just for the last words, quickly back to you, Mr. Ambassador, what kind of help do you need, that is the EU? What needs to be done at this point and by whom?
First of all, I'm a bit less pessimistic than Constanza about the loss of credibility of everybody. Everybody has lost credibility. It's true that the European Union is not a so prominent actor, but it's seen also as a relatively benign actor as a whole, because we are working on development. So we are not so much stigmatized than other players. And it is true also to say that there's no player which is not stigmatized by this day. Nobody has credibility in this region, which is a testimony of the depth of a crisis. I tend to believe also that it's not so much the colonial legacy, it's the demography and the economic crisis which makes these countries so vulnerable. You know, development rhythm has not followed the demography, and you have a shock caused by globalization and internet. And also there is a problem of identity. They react because they see this globalization as a threat to their identity, and they want to maintain some identity. And this also coincides with, as Constanza rightly pointed out, a weakening of the secular regime in the Muslim world. And the problem is that we have not found a solution which could replace this regime and at the same time satisfy better the needs of the population. The proper answer is that the answer is first and foremost not in our hands. The answer is in the hands of the people of the region, because we cannot dictate the solutions. The solutions have to come from them. But it's terrible. We are here to help them, to stimulate and support when we see promising avenues being opened. For example, in Libya today, we fiercely try to support the efforts of the UN special envoy to build up a transition government which would be representative of everybody in Libya. Well, we hope to arrive at something looking like that one day in Syria. And we support also all the efforts to reduce the areas of conflict in Yemen. But, you know, up to a certain point, the times of colonies passed since very long. So the answer is not in our hand directly. It's in the hand of the people of the region first.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Ambassador François Rivasseau. He's deputy head of the EU delegation to the United States, and Constanze Stelzenmüller. She's senior fellow with the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution. Thank you both for coming in, sharing your terrific insights. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wagner Roberts, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.